Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and you're listening to the eighth in my series, Deconstructing the Great Awakening Map. As always, I'm truly grateful to be here speaking with you, and I hope you're continuing to enjoy our deep dive on this strange and compelling web artifact. You can always email me about other interesting topics and guests. You can contact us via the website or via Twitter is the best way at Awaken Exchanges. I'll keep bringing you the content that you ask for, and I'm grateful that you keep asking. As this is going to be a solo episode, I'm going to try to include full video as well. Sadly for you, that may be more boring than just the images I was posting along with it before, but maybe I'll decide to add a cutaway scene or two for those as well. Just as an FYI, to make this seem a little bit less daunting, I may retitle these episodes here soon. While yes, they are all breaking down the Great Awakening map, by grouping them together in smaller chunks, people seem to be less scared to take the plunge and dive into conversation. So with the new titling format, this may be something like Secret Space Program Part 1, 8th of the Great Awakening Map Series, something like that. Hopefully it'll make it a little bit more user-friendly for new people as they start to explore with us. If you haven't already seen it, you can still find a copy of the high-res map in our show notes and our website at awakenedexchanges.com. If you're checking out the Telegram channel or the Twitter feed, you can see the highlights that I've made to the map as well, and you can know how I'm grouping these topics together as we go along. If you're wondering what I'm doing with my hand down here, by the way, Shadow is crawling around trying to decide where she's going to lay while I record this current episode. So, back to this. I've already given the disclaimers that we're talking about a lot of conspiracy theories in this series, so let's keep that in mind when we decide how to weigh all of these things. My goal in this series has been to give you a brief overview of the mountain of topics and terms that are thrown at you by this map. I think we've done a fairly good job of that so far, but every segment we've done has had multiple topics that could each have their own episode or more. We've had people ask for deeper dives on certain subjects, and next time I tackle a topic, I'll try and do one with a little bit more limited scope so that I can actually do so. If I'm really lucky, maybe I'll actually get some of the experts on the topic to come co-host an episode or two with me as well. I'm going to try and keep this intro brief yet again, but I want to remind you that I'm updating my pinned Twitter threads and Telegram channel each week to collect all of the visuals that go along with this series. I hope that you're still enjoying the threads, and if you need a link to the Telegram channel, it's in the show notes as well as on our website. I hope that you choose to engage with us in the exchange over there. Before we get to the Secret Space Program, here's a brief rundown of our sponsors. Remember that after this ad break, which you can skip as I do give you timestamps in the show notes, we won't have any more ads in the middle to break up the flow. Supporting our sponsors really can help keep this show running from week to week. That said, as always, I want to thank each of you personally for your support. Just listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep providing the best content possible. If you have the means and would like to contribute personally, please take a look at our Patreon page where you will get access to exclusive content and deals. There are already bonus videos available, and more are on the way. As for our other sponsors, Awaken Vapes was the first of the Awaken brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only, high-terpene vape products since 2019. Genesis Farms has been making the highest quality medicinal RSO, among many other fantastic products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And last but not least, the Caramel Corn Company, bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on YouTube, or follow us wherever else you're listening. If you can, please leave us a review or a comment on Apple Podcasts. It really does help spread the word. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. All right, now, stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal. Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products made with love and care. Community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just the beginning of what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state. Their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner coming back for more. Find them on Facebook and Instagram and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges. It's episode number 3. The Caramel Corn Company is bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. Made with premium ingredients in small, handcrafted batches and completely gluten-free. Their flavors include original, roasted cashew, salted almond, mixed nut, spicy sriracha, white morsel macadamia, peanut butter, butterscotch, and my personal favorites, chocolate drizzle and raspberry caramel apple. I can't say enough about how delicious this caramel corn is. It makes a great gift any time of the year. You can find them for sale in Portland area market of choice locations and hopefully again online soon when they get stocked back up. Please visit www.caramelcorncompany.com for more information today. And remember, buying local supports small businesses and keeps your money building your community. Last but not least, Awakened Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vapes since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines and no prescribed pills helped alleviate the symptoms. Having only tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. Despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban and then a global health crisis with COVID, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our 3 varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with the custom blended effect profiles. Check back at www.awakenedvapes.com for any updates, and you can always email us about wholesaling or white labeling opportunities. We're back again. This is our first episode on the Secret Space Program and our 8th episode involving the Great Awakening Map. I can't believe how much content 5D crammed onto that one sheet piece of art. We're going to actually start in the center of this section, which is outlined in red on my highlighted version of the map. It's also going to be re-included in the show notes this week, as well as being the highlighted section of our Twitter and Instagram feed. So we're going to start here because I think you need an overview before we get into the Dark Fleet, which is where the top left starting point would be this week. Also, if any of this sounds familiar, then you've probably listened to part 3 or some of the other parts of our series, which there is some overlap. If you haven't noticed, there's a lot of overlap on this map, and it goes back and forth, and they're in multiple spaces, and it's a weird web of topics that kind of mix and match, and some that are, let's just say, out there. All right, let's get down to it. What is the conspiracy theory behind the Secret Space Program? We've got to start with the Gary McKinnon hackings in 2002. He seems to have kicked off the whole tidal wave of Secret Space Program information out there. And since I want to stick to some of the more reliable resources, if you still consider it one, I'm going to use Wikipedia to tell you a little bit about this hacker and his story. Now, I know Wikipedia can be edited, but it's also at least trying to check on resources and information instead of just putting everything out there. All right, Gary McKinnon was accused of hacking into 97 United States military and NASA computers over a 13-month period between February 2001 and March of 2002. He was using the name Solo, of course, after the notorious outlaw in the Star Wars series. And he happened to disrupt munition supplies and supposedly caused over $700,000 in costs trying to track his exploits and fix the problems that he was causing. He denies those allegations and has been fighting extradition for them ever since. I think I get to that a little bit later on. He was first interviewed and his computer was seized on March 19, 2002. The U.S. has been trying to extradite him since November of 2002 with no luck. As of October 16, 2012, Theresa May, who was then the Home Secretary in the UK, announced that he has Asperger's syndrome and suffers from depressive illness. Mr. McKinnon's extradition would give rise to such a high risk of him ending his life that a decision to extradite would be incompatible with Mr. McKinnon's human rights. In an interview televised with the BBC's Click program, McKinnon stated that he was able to get into the military's networks simply by using a Perl script that searched for blank passwords. That's right, you heard me. Blank passwords. In other words, his report suggests that there were computers on these networks, high security, NASA, government computers, that had the default passwords active. I don't even know what to say. Having maybe been a little bit gray hat back in the day, I cannot tell you how many things you can still get into because people don't like to change the default passwords. Anyway, in his interview with the BBC, he also stated of the Disclosure Project that they are some very credible, relied-upon people all saying, yes, there is UFO technology, there's anti-gravity, there's free energy, and it's extraterrestrial in origin. And they've captured spacecraft and reverse-engineered it. He also said that he investigated a NASA photographic expert's claim that the Johnson Space Center's Building 8 images were regularly cleaned of evidence of UFO craft and confirmed this by comparing the raw originals with the processed images. Now, he stated to have viewed a detailed image of something not man-made and cigar-shaped floating above the northern hemisphere. Assuming his view would be undisrupted owing to the hour, he did not think of capturing the image because he was bedazzled and therefore did not think of securing it with a screen capture function in the software. At this point, his connection was interrupted. He also had another big reveal, quoting from a Wired interview that I'm including in the show notes this week. I also got access to Excel spreadsheets. One was titled Non-Terrestrial Officers. It contained names and ranks of U.S. Air Force personnel who are not registered anywhere else. It also contained information about ship-to-ship transfers, but I've never seen the names of these ships noted anywhere else. He was a hacker, and there should be proof, right? Well, he says that his 56.6K modem, which is theoretically in the right range for the time, was too slow to download the images or spreadsheets and print them off and do all the other stuff that he would have liked to do. He also told John Ronson that he didn't remember the specific names of the ships because he smoked too much dope at the time, which wasn't good for his intellect. Hold on. I can't agree with that, but I do take a little offense to this statement because I smoke a fair amount, and I don't believe my intellect is impaired by it most of the time. My verbal skills can be, and maybe I wouldn't remember all of the little details, but I think that if I had hacked into NASA and found a non-terrestrial officer's spreadsheet, I might have taken a few notes, let alone printed the motherfucker out and moved on. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that he's going to blame it on cannabis. But I understand that he did hack into these places. The government did seize his computer, and if there was any evidence left, it was probably on that. The next topic is actually the Battle of Los Angeles. Some of you have heard about this. Most of you that do have at least also heard of the movie, which was a big sci-fi, you know, epic, which was nothing based on the actual Battle of Los Angeles, just had the title and the topic of an alien invasion. Okay, this all supposedly took place, or really it did take place, the night of February 24th and into the morning of the 25th of 1942. The Wikipedia version basically says that it was known as the Great Los Angeles Air Raid, which was the name given to it by contemporary sources, to a rumored attack on mainland United States by Imperial Japan and the subsequent anti-aircraft artillery barrage, which took place from late February 24th to early February 25th, 1942, over Los Angeles, California. The incident occurred less than 3 months after the U.S. had entered World War II because of the attack on Pearl Harbor, and one day after the bombardment of Elwood near Santa Barbara on February 23rd. Initially, the target of the aerial barrage was thought to be an attacking force from Japan, but speaking at a press conference shortly afterward, Secretary of the Navy Frank Knox called the purported attack a false alarm. Newspapers at the time published a number of reports and speculations of a cover-up. When documenting the incident in 1949, the United States Coast Artillery Association identified a meteorological balloon sent aloft at 1 a.m. as having started all of the shooting, and concluded that once the firing started, the imagination created all kinds of targets in the sky, and everyone joined in. In 1983, the U.S. Office of Air Force History attributed the event to a case of war nerves, triggered by a lost weather balloon and exacerbated by stray flares and shell bursts from adjoining batteries. The conspiracy theory version? A UFO, of course. Just look at the newspaper image. I'm going to go ahead and include that for you as well. Except you might want to keep in mind that they actually touched up those images. At the time, it's too blurry. There's no real negative of the actual image, but newspapers actually, you know, kind of highlighted this shape that we're seeing in there. But it was actually, it was not just like a still image and this is what was there. It was a touch-up job. I really do wish we had the negative so we could do more with the modern technology, but all we've got are copies of a copy of a copy that was already known to be messed with in 1942. So I don't have much faith in the government, and I do believe they covered something up of some sort, but I don't see any irrefutable evidence of a UFO here or anything. The next topic that we're going to get onto is Admiral Rico Botta. It says 1942 to 1946, but he served for a lot longer. I believe the map was talking about when it started during World War II. And this is where the story really begins, apparently. According to exopolitics.org and the article that I'm linking to in the show notes, the conspiracy theory goes that Admiral Botta, in addition to his official daytime naval duty as assembly and repair officer at Naval Air Station San Diego, in the evenings led a covert Navy program operating with 29 spies embedded in Nazi Germany's most advanced aerospace programs. In those programs, they were developing anti-gravity flying saucers. According to retired aerospace engineer William Tompkins, from 1942 to 1946, Admiral Botta seamlessly performed his official and covert Navy duties. The covert program learned from the Navy operatives, lieutenants in rank, that the Nazis had developed up to 30 prototypes of anti-gravity craft, some of which were capable of spaceflight, and it was Admiral Botta's duty to understand both the war and post-war potential of the Nazi aerospace programs. He was then to disseminate the relevant technical information acquired by those spies to his Navy superiors and also select U.S. aerospace companies. Think tanks and government laboratories were also included in bits and pieces of the information, apparently. It was Tompkins' job to assist Admiral Botta by physically taking the briefing packages created during the covert program to organizations with the technical expertise to understand the Nazi designs and the prototypes to assess their feasibility and incorporate them into the war effort, if possible. Tompkins did that approximately 1,200 times, or so he says. Each late-night debriefing session was run by the Admiral with one or more out of a pool of three Navy captains in attendance, along with Tompkins and a stenographer to record the sessions, of course. After the official end of World War II, Botta went on to play a key role in starting the U.S. Navy-led secret space program, filling a number of positions until his final official assignment at the Naval Air Materiel Center in Philadelphia from 1950 until his retirement in 1952. We'll talk more about Tompkins later on. As for Botha, the official records do confirm that by 1942 he had nearly 9 years' experience in a variety of areas associated with aircraft engineering, design, and power supply. Exopolitics points out that, consequently, if the Navy had spies embedded in Nazi Germany, then Admiral Botha would have been an ideal choice for someone who could debrief them on the subject and adequately assess the technical information involved, as well as maybe pass on relevant information to select aerospace companies and think tanks for further study and development. At least that's what Tompkins contends. It goes on to point out that when Admiral Botha took over command of the Naval Air Materiel Center on July 1, 1950, he was in charge of a facility that was capable of running up to 1,000 experimental aviation projects. Not only is this powerful confirmation that Botha had the expertise to run a covert program with 29 operatives embedded in Nazi Germany's secret aerospace programs, but that he continued to work on such projects well into the 50s. At least, Exopolitics is claiming that. So let's recap it a little bit. The map asserts that the spies were sent into Germany and found Nazi ARVs. Okay, UFO, ARV, fairly interchangeable. The difference is an ARV is an alien reproduction vehicle. So they say that they're reverse engineered from alien technology, of course. This is apparently where it would all begin. That's the case. All right. Admiral Botha is a fascinating individual, but I don't have enough time to really dive deeper than I just gave you on there, because it goes directly into Eisenhower next, which contends, in 1954 was Eisenhower's first extraterrestrial meeting, and that would have been at Holloman Air Force Base. Now, this is stated as fact, and the conspiracy theory is that there were at least three meetings in various locations between Eisenhower and ETs, and while I have heard this theory since the 90s at the very latest, I didn't see anything that really warranted evidence, no matter how much I would like to believe that there is something out there. The map also mentions that there are 34 levels above POTUS and 34 levels below, as far as top secret classifications go. I couldn't find a better place to put this subject, so I put it here because if that is the case, it's likely Truman or his successor, Eisenhower, who ended up warning us about the military-industrial complex, after all, that would have put those classification levels in place to help secure national defense and also consequently embolden the deep state. Now, the deep state is technically, it exists. It's just most people only hear about the conspiracy theory side, so as soon as you hear the term, you're just done. But politicians are elected. Jobs that are in DC are not necessarily elected. There are a lot of security people, a lot of FBI, a lot of CIA, NSA, people that work for places like that, that just don't go away. They can keep secrets longer because they may or may not be beholden to whoever's in power. I don't know. What is known is that the number of official classification levels, 7, and that's if you include unclassified as a level. The others are public trust, confidential, restricted or formally restricted data, code word classified, and then secret and top secret. Both of those can also be code word classified, so they can further compartmentalize and also keep only specific people getting the information that they want them to get, which is also coincidentally what Bob Lazar talked about them doing when he was at S4, keeping the scientists apart and only propulsion working on propulsion, materials working on materials, things like that. It sounds very government and not very smart, so believable. There are other theories, 21 levels, 38 levels, who knows what else. But if there are other classification levels, I could find no actual evidence of it, which would, you know, make sense since they would be classified. Anyway, during this time period, they also talk about the brain drain. The map says the brain drain of the 50s and 60s, where 60 plus million people were recruited into the SSP. There's always been speculation about something along the lines of the brain drain, but this conspiracy theory seems to come from none other than Corey Good. His Cosmic Disclosure interviews with David Wilcock talk a little bit more about this as far as the number of people recruited into the secret space program and attributing the brain drain to this. What I've actually heard contributing to the brain drain was the fact that we started using lead paint in everything. And we noticed increases in violence. We noticed crime statistics go up. We noticed IQ levels drop with lead. All of these other things are out there. And we're just kind of starting to realize that that led to a lot of the problems. As we get into the 80s and those start to go away, it's, we don't realize how much damage has been caused, but it's there. I don't attribute that to, secret space program indoctrination or abduction, but who knows? We'll be talking at least a little bit more about Corey Good and David Wilcock again later on. But the next little phrase on the map was Pleiadian guidance led to the Apollo moon landings. I couldn't find anything out about this claim other than the map and the fact that some people think Pleiadians are trying to guide us to a higher vibration. I get it. The map is all about Great Awakening and getting to that higher vibration, so the Pleiadians being responsible for any of the things that get us closer to that could be some sort of a theory, especially since they don't view time as we do, apparently, either. Anyway, I don't really know where to put this. It's just one of those things where I knew I had to at least mention the phrase. All right, the next set is actually a list. It's a list of secret space program researchers that the map lists. I'm going to try and keep it as condensed as I can. Like I said, I want to make this as accessible and just be brief overview for everybody. I do suggest these names as a place to start, at the very least, if you want to do a deep dive for yourself. The first name on this list is actually one of the ones I was just talking about, David Wilcock. Cosmic Disclosure is also listed in this section of the map, but if you want to know more about him or Corey Good, please check out part one of this series, which is episode 18 of the podcast. We talk more about their whole interactions, how they met, and what I personally think. I would love to discuss things with them personally and see what they have to say, but I doubt that's likely. Even though Corey did comment on my post about that first one with him in it, he removed another comment about giving interviews because I think he then listened to or read what I was actually saying, which is not trying to be derogatory. It's basically just saying that I don't have any evidence. I would love for you to provide the evidence. Please provide the evidence. If you want to provide the evidence here, great, because yeah, I would love to have that come out on my show somehow. I just don't see that happening. So, learn more about him, episode 18, part one of this whole series. Dr. Michael Sala is the next name. He's actually the founder of the term exopolitics, at least according to his website, and the information I could find about him. His website says that exopolitics is the political study of the key actors, institutions, and processes associated with extraterrestrial life. His interest in exopolitics evolved out of his investigation of the sources of international conflict and its relationship to an extraterrestrial presence that is not acknowledged to the general public, elected officials, or even senior military officials. It also says that Dr. Sala's groundbreaking Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence, published in 2004, was the first book published on exopolitics and explained the political implications of extraterrestrial life. I didn't dive much deeper into him. Gaia.com is actually the next thing. Not a person, but okay, if it's a secret space program whistleblower, I would assume that's because it's home to Cosmic Disclosure, as well as a lot of other projects that are of interest to people who want to study about the metaphysical or secret space program kind of things. The next name on this list is Kerry Cassidy. According to the ProjectCamelotPortal.com, in 2005, Kerry picked up a consumer-grade camcorder and began interviewing people on the subject of UFOs, the paranormal, and the secret space program. Project Camelot was formed when Kerry Cassidy and Bill Ryan met and spent the week in Tintagel, and I'm sure I mispronounced that, Tintagel, T-I-N-T-A-G-E-L, England, overlooking the sea in the home of King Arthur. Inspired by the legend of King Arthur and the Round Table, and that utopian vision of a future, they decided to combine their talents and name their project in tribute to this vision, hence Project Camelot. It also says that since its inception, Project Camelot has become a leader in the area of whistleblower testimony by providing filmed interviews, shot guerrilla style, on location, with key witnesses and researchers from all around the world. We have traveled to remote corners of the globe and revealed secrets in areas previously only known to a select few from the secret societies as well as those with high-level security clearances in the governments. Project Camelot has now been operating for over 16 years with Kerry Cassidy at the helm as CEO and founder. Yeah, I listened to a couple of the interviews, and great. Where's the evidence? Whistleblowers, great. Bob Lazar had information he couldn't have had, which it took 30 years for them to start proving some of this stuff, such as the handprint technology that measured the space between your bones that was his access into S4. We just started getting pictures of that within the last couple of years of those machines. Before that, we didn't even know they existed. When he came out with that, it was basically classified technology. They were very few in existence. At least he was credible. He had a, even though they tried to hide it, he did work for a propulsion company beforehand. I just don't see how the people that she has interviewed, at least for the most part, have the same qualifications there. So, anyway, Dr. Stephen Greer is the next name on this list. If you're seeing any video glitches on here, I do have to try and reset my camera every once in a while because I'm using the integrated cam in order to capture this. I don't have the right equipment set up for it, and I haven't been able to prioritize it with all the other stuff going on with the vape company and everything. So, that said, let's get on to Dr. Stephen Greer. As I was saying before, which is probably edited out because I had to switch the camera, he's an American ufologist and retired traumatologist who founded the Center for Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence and the Disclosure Project, which seeks the disclosure of allegedly classified secret UFO information. I was listening to a talk that he was giving while I was writing this section, and he sounds very authoritative and smart, but I didn't dig very deep into his credentials. I will say that actforliberties.org says that he is setting himself up as the next L. Ron Hubbard, and that his seminar, quote, claims to teach attendees to remote view, cultivate cosmic consciousness, and to be precognitive or see the future, all through meditation techniques, supernatural, psychic powers, all for the small fee of $995. For less than a grand, Greer will teach you to have not only psychic powers, but cosmic powers to contact aliens. Plus, all of his books are required for the seminar, of course. a lot of that sure sounds like con artist kind of stuff to me. So where's the proof? I don't like when people try to charge you money for something and aren't actually providing an actual product. I am doing my absolute best to keep this podcast free, and I will not charge for it, even if that means I can't make it anymore. But, you know, supporting, you know, Awakened Vapes, supporting the other sponsors, things like that do help. But I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. He takes a credibility ding for me right there. Richard Hoagland is the next name on the list, and he plays a bigger part on this map than I would have expected, considering I hadn't really heard the name much before. There's a quote on the map that's attributed to him that says, "The lie is different at every level." And according to Wikipedia, his main assertions are that the source of the so-called NASA cover-up with relation to the face on Mars and other related structures is the result of a report commissioned by NASA, authored by the Brookings Institution, the so-called Brookings Report. The 1960 report, entitled "Proposed Studies on the Implications of Peaceful Space Activities for Human Affairs," is claimed by Hoagland on page 216 of the report to instruct NASA to deliberately withhold from the public any evidence it may find of extraterrestrial activity, specifically on the Moon, Mars, or Venus. I wasn't able to find the report, and I didn't really feel like giving it that much more attention, considering how much more material there is to cover in the secret space program. So let's see what else he has to say. He also proposed a form of physics that he calls hyperdimensional physics, which I believe we will be talking about as well. He claims that this type of physics represents a more complete implementation of James Clerk Maxwell's original 20 quaternion equations instead of the equations that were amended by Olivier Heaviside, and they're commonly taught today, which I believe are 16, not 20. Anyway, these ideas are rejected by mainstream physics as unfounded. Hoagland claims that the face on Mars is part of a city built on Cydonia Planitia, consisting of very large pyramids and mounds arranged in a geometric pattern. To Hoagland, this is evidence that an advanced civilization might have once existed on Mars. In the years since its discovery, the face has been near universally accepted as an optical illusion, an example of the psychological phenomenon of pareidolia. Similar optical illusions can be found in the geology of Earth. Examples include the Old Man in the Mountain, the Pedra de Gavia, and the Stack Lavinish, which I will try to include pictures of for those of you watching YouTube, if not on the Twitter feed as well. Lastly, although the Pioneer 10 plaque was designed entirely by Carl Sagan, Linda Saltzman, or Linda Saltzman Sagan, rather, and Frank Drake, Hoagland has inaccurately asserted that he co-created the plaque with Eric Burgess. I don't really know what else to say about Richard Hoagland. It's just hard to put any credibility into the kernels that could be there when there are so many lies or just misinformation in his statements. So I'm going to move on to Jay Sather. And it looks like Jay is now going by the name Jordan Sather. At one point, Jordan, or Jay, had over 140,000 YouTube subscribers and millions of views, but I think his account is now inactive, probably deplatformed, as I could find no evidence of it beyond his interview filmed with Jim Jefferies in August of 2018, when he was first talking about the Q subject. And I love how Jim Jefferies gets to point out the craziness in the people that are out there while letting them be the ones to dig the hole. So I suggest looking up that clip if you'd like. Billy Carson is the next name on the list, and I have to admit I've been a little intrigued, but I've never paid for any of his stuff because every time I see something, it just has that feel to it. It's just, I don't know, slimy or something. I don't know anything about him as an individual. I'm not saying that he doesn't have good information out there. I'm just saying that I can't pay for it until I have it on a better authority that it would be worth my time to at least look into and assess. So he's most known as the host of his own 4K TV app and consciousness program called Forbidden Knowledge. That's the number 4, BIDDEN, knowledge.com. If you want to see more on his program, that's the best place to start. His online bio states that he is the best-selling author of the Compendium of the Emerald Tablets and is an expert host on Deep Space, a new original streaming series by Gaia. This series explores the secret space program, revealing extraordinary technologies and their potential origins. Billy Carson also serves as an expert host on Gaia's original series, Ancient Civilizations, in which a team of renowned scholars deciphers the riddles of our origins and pieces together our forgotten history, documented in monuments and texts from around the world. That's all I'm going to say about him. All right, David Icke. A lot of you are at least going to know this name, and let me just start with he is controversial. I was definitely familiar with his name before the map, but for those that aren't, here's a brief Wikipedia bio. David von Icke is an English conspiracy theorist and a former footballer and sports broadcaster. That is, of course, the English football, not the U.S. football. He has written over 20 books and spoken in over 25 countries. In 1990, as a spokesman for the Green Party, he visited a psychic who told him he was on Earth for a purpose and would receive messages from the spirit world. Now, this led him to state in 1991 that he was the son of the Godhead, and that the world would soon be devastated by tidal waves and earthquakes, predictions he repeated on the BBC show Wogan. Now, technically, okay, we're all sons or daughters of the Godhead, so I guess I could see that if that's a terminology issue. But his appearance led to public ridicule. Books that Icke wrote over the next 11 years developed his worldview of New Age conspiracism. His endorsement of an anti-Semitic forgery called the Protocols of the Elders of Zion in the Robots Rebellion and the Truth Shall Set You Free led his publishers to stop handling his books. He didn't stop writing, he just became self-published. Icke believes that the universe consists of vibrational energy and infinite dimensions sharing the same space. He claims an interdimensional race of reptilian beings, the Archons, or Anunnaki, have hijacked the Earth, and a genetically modified human Archon hybrid race of shape-shifting reptilians, the Babylonian Brotherhood, or Illuminati, or the Elite, manipulate events to keep humans in fear so that the Archons can feed off the resulting negative energy. He claims many public figures belong to the Babylonian Brotherhood and propel humanity towards a global fascist state or new world order, a post-truth era ending freedom of speech. He sees the only way to defeat such archonic influence, and I'm gonna just assume I got that close, is for people to wake up to the truth and fill their hearts with love. I don't think that's a bad thing to try and do, but the way he's going about it. Critics have accused Icke of being anti-Semitic, a Holocaust denier, and with his theories of reptilians serving as a deliberate code for anti-Semitism. I honestly think that when he denies that, that's true in his head. I think he's mixed up a lot of things. How about that? All right. Linda Moulton Howe is an American investigative journalist and regional Emmy Award-winning documentary filmmaker, best known for her work as a ufologist and advocate of a variety of conspiracy theories, including her investigation of cattle mutilations and the conclusion that they are performed by extraterrestrials. She is noted for her speculations that the U.S. government is still working with aliens. And on a side note, she was Miss Idaho in 1963, and before becoming more well-known with Strange Harvest, the 1980 documentary on cattle mutilations that catapulted her into this field of research. Next name on the list has got a fairly famous last name, Laura Eisenhower. Her website, cosmicgaia.org, it's available out there for everybody, and in it, her bio says that she is a global alchemist, researcher, and medical and intuitive astrologist. She is an internationally acclaimed speaker who has presented her work worldwide. But Laura is also the great-granddaughter of President Dwight D. Eisenhower, and she reveals exopolitical information about his administration that has been largely held in secrecy. She is considered by many to be one of North America's leading researchers on health, exopolitics, alchemy, metaphysics, and galactic history. Laura works to free us from the 3D holographic time loop, false archonic systems, and military-industrial complex, and exposes hidden agendas so we can take our power back. Feeling a calling regarding her mission since she was a child, she has gained incredible insight through her wilderness adventures, psychic development, and has been connecting major dots about how to guide us into higher Earth energies. She has a deep understanding of Gaia Sophia and our divine blueprint and how they connect to the Venus transits, Earth grids, global alchemy, DNA, and ET races. Her passion is to inspire unity consciousness and bring us back to the zero-point unified field, the totality of our divine powers. That's all from her website, and that is all quoted. I think that gives you a fair idea of who she is, what she's trying to say. I'm going to leave it at that. Jordan Maxwell, yet another Jordan, is an older gentleman, and you too can own the entire 28 DVD collection of Jordan Maxwell's astounding work on sale now for the low, low price of $450. His website is straight out of 1996 with an astounding photo editing job. Please take a look for yourself at jordanmaxwell.com. I'm not going to read the insanely long bio on here because I read it once. That was enough. Let's just say that he's an enthusiast of all kinds of bizarreness. George Noory is a name that you probably have heard of, or if you have any interest in this topic, you probably have heard of, since he's well known around the world of weird as the current host of Coast to Coast AM, which reaches millions of listeners on over 620 stations. And he took that over from the next name on the list, the former co-host of Coast to Coast AM, Art Bell, who died on Friday, April 13th, 2018. 6 months later, the coroner's office stated that Bell died of an accidental overdose from a cocktail of prescription drugs. The coroner's office determined he had four prescription medications in his systems: the opioids oxycodone and hydrocodone, Valium, and Soma, a muscle relaxant. COPD and hypertension also contributed to his death, according to them. There's a lot of people who speculated it may not have been necessarily accidental. I mean, the date, the time, things that were going on. Some conspiracy theorists tried to put it out as a murder. Most tend to think he was not having a great time. The next name on the list is Jay Weidner. I hope that's right. That's Weidner. He's the former content director for Gaia and seems to fancy himself a real-life Indiana Jones. I'll let you check out his bio at jweidner.com if you want to know more. Then he has a keen interest in and seems to be considered an expert in hermeticism and alchemy. Richard Dolan is the last name, thankfully, on this first list. RichardDolanPress.com seems to be his main website. A snippet of his bio includes this. Richard hosts a weekly radio show, The Richard Dolan Show, on KGRA Radio, and is a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM. He is currently featured on several television series and documentaries, including Ancient Aliens, Hangar One, The UFO Files, and Close Encounters. For a longer list of his television appearances, see his website. Prior to his interest in UFOs, Richard completed his graduate work at the University of Rochester, where he studied U.S. Cold War strategy, European history, and international diplomacy. Sounds, again, fairly intelligent. Before that, he had studied at Alfred University and Oxford University and had been a finalist for a Rhodes Scholarship. No dummy. But for the past two decades, Richard has been a dedicated student of all things related to UFOs, steadily expanding his interest within that topic from his initial focus on government documents and the cover-up. Now his interests include it all, from the deepest aspects of the cover-up to contact and abduction, the science behind the phenomenon, how the phenomenon has affected world culture. He also has a theory of a breakaway civilization, the possible relationship of artificial intelligence and biotechnology to the UFO phenomenon, and studies the implications to the end of secrecy, that is, the world after disclosure. Like I said, he studied U.S. Cold War strategy, European history, international diplomacy. He could fairly fathom a lot of these things, but then once you get into the, well, I do believe this exists, so let me fantasize about what it could mean if it did exist and what could have happened in those things, it becomes easier and easier to believe those kind of ideas about yourself. That's a ton of names and individual rabbit holes for you to dive into, and there are more to come. But the next thing the map claims is that after the Great Solar Flash, all of the secret space programs, infrastructure is going to be turned over to humanity. I guess we should try to break down what the map seems to claim that infrastructure is. It starts with the U.S. Air Force Military Industrial Complex Secret Space Program, according to the map, and that's MICSSP, which is M-I-C-S-S-P for the abbreviation. And remember, as I read these things, the map can be a series of phrases without much context other than what's around it. So if I read just a phrase or ramble for a minute, that's because there's no real thread for me to send you down. It's more just like providing the information that's on the map. For example, the map just says compartmentalized programs and is followed by funneling trillions of dollars from taxpayers and a quote that says $1,000 toilet seats. But when you put all those together, you can kind of read the story between the lines. And so I hope that all makes sense, because those are the real next examples that I was going to talk about. It's basically compartmentalized programs funneling trillions of dollars, such as those $1,000 toilet seats. Where is the money going? We talk about it a little bit, but it's, you know, black ops programs. The next infrastructure type program would probably be the Air Force Special Operations Command, AFSOC, which supposedly provides personnel for the MICSSP program above. The next set is USAP, or Unacknowledged Special Access Projects. Special Access Projects, or SAPs, are black ops types of programs, mostly funded by those $1,000 toilet seats and other budget misappropriations mentioned above. So in a sense, all SAPs are unacknowledged. They just drop that U after they're forced to tell us about them some point in the future, or they become declassified. Solar Warden is the next thing that we're going to talk about. It's one of those supposed black projects, or SAPs, a U.S. Navy space fleet, to be exact, Solar System Search and Intercept Science Vessel. They actually draw one at the bottom of this section, which I am going to include in Twitter, Telegram, Instagram, that kind of stuff. Check it out if you want. Interesting. Again, just a drawing and no actual evidence of anything. But Apparently, it was falsely associated with Gary McKinnon for a long time after those hacks that he had done, but he hadn't heard of it, according to an interview he was giving, until after Project Camelot, I believe, or one of those other sources. According to the Disclosure Wiki, Solar Warden is a secret space program run by the U.S. Space Force, and it is responsible for monitoring all incoming and outgoing traffic in the solar system. It patrols and defends our solar system. It will also travel to other solar systems for offensive missions. Around the late 90s, Solar Warden changed its name to Radiant Guardian. Map doesn't mention that one at all. But Radiant Guardian is divided into two fleets, a military offensive and a defensive fleet, and a scientific R&D fleet. No real evidence of where or how this could have been pulled off, or no real way to say any of this stuff is other than just wild speculation either. Not saying it couldn't have happened, I'm just saying I don't have evidence to give you guys. TR-3B is a spy plane, supposedly, that services low Earth orbit space stations. According to a brief military.com article, it doesn't officially exist, but it uses highly pressured mercury accelerated by nuclear energy to produce a plasma that creates a field of anti-gravity around the ship. Conventional thrusters located at the tips of the craft allow it to perform all manner of rapid, high-speed maneuvers along all three axes. Interestingly, the plasma generated also reduces radar signature significantly, so it'll be almost invisible on a radar and remain undetected. This literally means that it can go to any country it likes without being detected by air traffic control or and air defense systems. This article was from a decade ago, almost. I think 2013. Either way, it's been a theoretical black project for a long time. There's just no evidence. There wouldn't be. We, you know, do a fairly good job of keeping planes and technology secret until we want them to be known about, you know, or at least not acknowledging them. My lab is the next term, or the military abduction program. According to Exopedia, which is Exopaedia.com, my labs were first investigated by Dr. Helmut Lammer of the Austrian Space Research Institute. In a number of cases, abductees and sometimes UFO witnesses are subsequently re-abducted by humans in military uniforms. For this reason, Melinda Leslie started calling them re-abs. Nearly always unmarked helicopters are involved. The victims are usually drugged or sometimes disoriented by a strong electromagnetic field. During their military abduction, most of them receive an implant, usually behind the ear. My labs seem to be part of a wider operation aimed at monitoring and abducting abductees in order to keep a lid on the alien abduction phenomenon. My labs are different from regular alien abductions. For starters, they are limited to the USA, though I am aware of claims about some cases at present unconfirmed in Canada, the UK, and Australia, says the website. Furthermore, my labs involve activity of dark, unmarked helicopters, the appearance of strange vans or buses outside the houses of abductees, exposure to disorienting electromagnetic fields, drugging, transport with a helicopter, bus, or truck to an unknown building or an underground military facility. Usually there are physical after effects like grogginess and sometimes nausea right after the kidnappings. And I don't know what else to say other than sure sounds like a modern MIB story. So if the men in black are back, I suppose, you know, maybe they never stopped. I don't know. I'm going to talk about 20 and back. It's a term that Corey Good and a few of the other supposed whistleblowers like to use. The map says 20 and back, memory wipe slash reverse aging, and then a quote that says, blank slating, ineffective on 5% of whistleblowers. All right, those two concepts are fairly self-explanatory. If you hear someone saying that they served 20 and back, it basically means that they are claiming that they served 20 years in the secret space program. Then they had their memories wiped and then reverse aged to their previous self and reinserted into society. Sounds like a fairly convoluted way to explain how they could have so much information, because they're obviously not making any of it up, and you know their real lives happened here. They were just put back into their bodies afterwards, so that's why their friends and family didn't see them as missing for 20 years. They're obviously not making any of it up. I mean, how do you know? Because they're the 5% that the blank slating didn't work on, of course. I mean, it says so right there. Yeah, I know. Things like this make my brain hurt after a while. I wish there was something I could say other than that. Instead, I'm just going to go ahead and wrap this up for this week, and thank you again for being here with me. I'm going to try and get as much information into the next few episodes that I can. Again, I'm getting to some more camera glitches, I think, so hopefully they're not going to be too bad for you here. Thank you again for joining me here, and I hope to see you back next week. All right, thank you again for listening to me ramble through another episode of one of the most fascinating and confusing pop art pieces of the last decade. I hope you enjoyed exploring the secret space program as much as I did, and that you're looking forward to next week's whistleblowers starting off the segments. I want to give a special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on YouTube, or wherever else you're listening, and if you can, please leave us a 5-star review or a comment on Apple Podcasts. It really will help with visibility. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. Thanks again. Have a blessed day.